Blog Talk Radio.
It's a brand new morning. What's my reason? Against all living. With the brand new mercy I'm giving.
Good evening. You're listening to Women in Motion. Good evening. You're listening to Women in Motion, and I am just helping Peggy out this evening. And this evening, we're going to have a wonderful show with a wonderful guest. Her name is Janine M. Coveney. And right now, before we get into everything, we're going to go into a commercial. And then when we come back, we are going to start this show live. Let's go into a commercial. When we come back, we'll start the show.
Joyful Expressions Paint and Taste Studio is a fun place to celebrate any occasion. We provide every guest with an apron, easel, canvas, brush, paint, and an instructor to guide you step by step through the creation of your masterpiece. Come on time so that you can pick a good seat and order your drink. Joyful Expressions now has Taco Tuesday, a margarita wine and two tacos with chips and salsa. Thirsty Thursday with wine and snacks. Friday fun night and Saturday brunch with two wings, a Belgian waffle, and bottomless mimosas. Reserve your seat today at joyfulexpressions.gallery. Prices start at only $24. Joyful Expressions is located at 14800 Southwestern Avenue, number 104 in the city of Gardena. 310-692-6999. That's 310-692-6999. It's your time to shine and get your paint and party on. It's lit. JoyfulExpression.gallery. Also, check out the Facebook page.
And we are back with Women in Motion on eWater Radio, KEWRDB. And our host with the Moses is here this evening. And hi, Peggy. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing today, Nicole?
I am wonderful. I just wanted to introduce you, and I'm going to go ahead and hand this off to you. And I wish you well on your show this evening.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you much. And we are Women in Motion. And you have a great, awesome Sunday. And I want to say happy Sunday to all of our listeners out there. Hello, everyone. How are you doing? I know you can't respond back, but I'd like to let you know that you are listening to womeninmotion.biz. And Women in Motion is on the eWater Radio. It's featured at KEWR-DB. Listeners, you can call in right now. Tell your friend, share it, 323-642-1757. That's 323-642-1757. You can also listen on www.blogtalkradio.com/eWater Radio. Go to our website. Right now we are doing some reconstruction with our website, but our website is www.womeninmotion.biz for more information. So, Nicole, I know that you're there, but I just want to say that we still like to give honor and respect for Sheila Ferguson. She was the producer, along with myself, of womeninmotion.biz. We're still going to continue to keep Women in Motion and keep this radio show going full force. That's what she would have wanted. So just take a moment of silence and just give honor for Sheila Ferguson, who I miss and love so much. Okay, thank you. Thank you. So in a minute, we're about to go live, and I have a very special, phenomenal guest that's joining me today. And I'd just like to say a little bit about her. Her name is Janine M. Coveney. And Janine M. Coveney, she is a entertainer, a journalist, a writer, and an editor. She wears many hats. So, Janine, are you there? Welcome.
Thank you so much, Peggy. I am here. Can you hear me?
I sure can hear you. Nice to have you on today.
You.
How's your day going?
It's beautiful, and I really thank you for having me on Women in Motion tonight, Peggy. I'm looking forward to our talk.
Okay, and it's nice having you on. How's the weather where you're at? You're a little distance away, but I really appreciate you taking the time to join us and share all the phenomenal hats that you wear and all the wonderful things that you are doing and that you have done.
Absolutely. I'm actually in Virginia Beach, Virginia, which is a beautiful spot on the ocean, not far from the North Carolina line, and we have a beautiful beach, and it was a beautiful 82-degree day today. So it's all good here.
That's good. And I'm just going to take a moment of time, Janine, just to introduce you properly, just like to let our listeners know. Janine Coveney is a – did I get your name right?
Janine Coveney, uh-huh.
Janine Coveney is a veteran entertainer, journalist, and freelance writer, a editor, and who has held staff positions at Essence, Billboard, Airplay Monitor, and Lunch/Yahoo, among other outlets. Originally from Bronx, New York, she has also worked at Aristic Records in marketing, where she worked on campaigns for Whitney Houston, Aretha Franklin, Usher, and Toni Braxton, respective records and publicity, working with Mint Conditions. CC is a Peniston, Sounds of Blackness, and Barry White. She also served as a content and communications manager for the Recording Academy's Advocacy Division in Washington, D.C. As a freelance writer, she has written dozens of official bios for numerous recording artists and liner notes essays for many CD releases. As a book coach and editor, she has helped a number of new authors get their works into print. Just last month, Janine had the opportunity to edit the official bio for the late Aretha Franklin, which appeared in the program for her national televised homegoing service in Detroit on August the 30th. So, Janine, there's so much that you do, and we're going to learn a lot about you today.
Exactly.
Wow.
I think a lot of women, when we go through our careers, we have many different stages and many different hats that we have to wear, so I think it's just typical. I'm sure you know that too, Peggy.
Oh, yes. You just have to do it, right, and to get to the level where you've gotten at. And I want you to just share that when and how did you know you were a writer?
Okay. I've always known I wanted to be a writer, and that's kind of like the crux of what I do is writing. When I was a kid, I was an early reader, and I think to be a good writer, you have to be a voracious reader. You have to read a lot of different things. I knew in elementary school I wanted to be a writer. I went to a high school in New York City that was a specialized high school that had a lot of emphasis on literature, English, writing, critical thinking. So I think that really, really helped me. And then when I got to college, I studied a lot about publishing. I went to Simmons College in Boston, which is a women's college that just turned into Simmons University, by the way.
Wow.
So that's good news. But yeah, just always interested in the written word and in expressing myself in storytelling. You know, I was always fascinated by stories, fiction stories, but also news, journalism. They're telling you a story as well, so that we can understand what's happening in our world. So just that idea of telling people in words always fascinated me.
Okay, you were always fascinated with that at an early age, and you went to a phenomenal school, and it wasn't an all-girls school at first that you went to? I think we had
My high school was a specialized high school. It was Hunter College High School, which was not run by New York City Public Schools. It was run by the New York City University System. So it was a little bit experimental at that time, and it was all girls, so we didn't have the distraction of boys in our classes. And, you know, some really interesting people graduated from my high school, and I think it gave me a really good grounding in literature or the arts. I was really interested in music as well, so that helped me a lot in my career. When I graduated, I graduated in the same class as Elena Kagan, who is
okay.
A Supreme Court justice. So, yeah.
Wow.
people. And then later on, I decided to earn my master's in fine arts in creative writing, because that's how much I loved writing. So I also have an MFA in creative writing from Antioch University in Los Angeles, out there in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Wow, awesome. How long have you been writing?
Oh, gee. Okay, so now I'm really going to tell my age, okay?
Yeah, you don't have to go there. You can just, because you said as a child you always loved writing, so we kind of bypass that. But
no, that's fine, because really I have been writing, I would have to say, at least 30, 40 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow, a long time. You were always confident in your writing, right? Because you said you enjoyed stories and things like that.
You know, it's interesting, and I think other women as well, and everybody in general, you have something that you're interested in when you're young. And so, you know, you go out and practice whatever it is, whether you like singing or you're an engineer or a writer. The thing for me is I did a lot of writing in high school, and people would always say to me, wow, you're such a good writer. And I would get high marks on my essays. And I was interested in poetry and fiction as well. So I wrote a lot of stories. I wrote a lot of poetry. When I was in college, I remember going to Quinnipiac College, which is a college in Connecticut, being invited for a Black Student Arts Weekend and actually doing a poetry reading. So I think I read like, you know, 10, 15 of my poems. And people said, oh, my God, you're such an amazing writer. So that really gives you confidence to go on. And even when people critiqued me and said, hey, you need to get a little bit better at this. You're too wordy. You need to cut it down. Think about developing your writing this way. You know, you take that in and then you practice it, and that's how you get better. And that gave me my confidence to become an editor of other writers as well.
But some people get offended when they're critiqued, but you took it as positive constructive criticism, right, to help you get to the next level so you can perfect yourself, right?
Exactly. But, you know, some people don't take criticism well, and it's true that some people don't give criticism well. So we all
That's
know
true.
People who want to criticize us, and we're like, wait a minute, you're putting me down. So that has to be careful. And when you're editing other people too, because I work with a lot of other writers, I have to be really careful to not make them feel like I'm criticizing them, and that can be hard because writing is really personal. Like we're putting our thoughts and our feelings down on paper. So it becomes, you know, it's really like songwriting. That's really personal. So you don't want to offend people. Like they're giving you their heart on a piece of paper, and you're like, this is no good. You know, so you have to be careful about that.
Right, because we are, everything we do in life is a story. And writing is a way to express that story.
It totally is. And I think that writing is one of those I think it's an underappreciated talent these days in these digital technical times because of, you know, people are texting and they're truncating their words and they're using slang. And writing is important because I think it's the major way that we get our information these days. Yes, there's video and there's, you know, news and, you know, we're being told in visuals, but we still absorb a lot of information by reading. So good writing, you know, informative writing, it is really, really important, I think.
Wow, that's good. And you had a hunger for it because a lot of time we have desires and we have things and passion that we want to do those things, but we have that fear of never accomplishing it, procrastinating and never get into that level. And I admire you because you have accomplished that, and not only writing, but talk about entertainer, because you're also an entertainer. We have a lot to talk about with you on today because you do so many things, but entertainer, what part
of
entertainer?
I have to correct you a little bit there, Peggy, and I'm sorry for the miscommunication, but I'm not an entertainer. I'm an entertainment journalist. So what that means is that as a journalist, I've written a lot for a lot of different publications about the entertainment business. So I'm covering music makers, people who sign artists, people who tour, people who create marketing campaigns to bring music to the attention of fans, how to get music to retail, how it's sold, how it's heard on the radio. So I'm covering that as a business and writing those stories about that. Girl, I wish I was an entertainer.
Well, being a writer, you kind of are an entertainer. Talk a little bit about preparing them for record labels and getting their artists where they need to go. What all goes into that, your part, what you do on your end in detail?
Okay, so just to kind of encapsulate my career a little bit, when I got out of college, I was fortunate to go to Essence Magazine for a little while, and so I really learned how to write for a magazine, write on deadline, write to a particular audience. So I was fortunate to go right across the street, catty corner in Times Square, to Billboard Magazine as a copy editor first. So copy editor is kind of a staff position where you're helping to correct the writing of all the other writers on the staff. Like they're writing their reporting, their feature stories, their interviews, and it's coming to the copy desk to me to be corrected for grammar, to make sure that it fits into the space that we have within the magazine and that everything is fact-checked. So doing that, Billboard is considered the music industry Bible. Everything that you want to know about what's going on in the music industry is being reported in those pages. So I was already a huge music fan. I knew like a lot about R&B music and some about jazz, but just as a fan. So reading other people's writing really gave me an education in the music industry. And then I had kind of a mentor in Nelson George, who was the R&B music editor of Billboard at that time. And he's an excellent writer, and he is pretty well known now as a author. He writes about a lot of different cultural issues. He's a filmmaker. He's still making multiple projects, but at that time I edited a lot of his writing. And then when he left the magazine, I was named R&B music editor. Okay, so that's primarily what happened. So just to continue, my task was to, on a weekly basis, write all the business stories, all the happenings within the music industry. So let's say it's like right now, it's the first week in October. What new records are coming out by what artists? Okay, so that's one kind of story. Who's going on tour and where are they going? How many cities are they visiting? How big are the venues? What does the label expect? Yeah. Where is this record going to radio? What radio stations around the country is the record going to be heard on? So that's a different kind of story. Another story is I'm going to interview that artist. Let's say it's Usher, who is still on the scene these days. Hi, Usher. What were you thinking when you made this record? What was it like in the studio? What producers did you work with? Who are your influences? What do you hope to accomplish? So you're getting a story from the horse's mouth, essentially, about how they made the music, why they make the music. So all of this is fascinating to fans and other people in the music industry. So that's what I was doing. And, girl, it was a complete education because it was very fast-paced. There were a lot of record labels with a lot of black music divisions that wanted coverage for their artists and their executives. So every day was different, and it was fast, and it was fun, too. I'm not going to lie.
A lot of fun, huh? Because you became the R&B music editor at Billboard. So that was in 1989, and then the experience difference between from being at Essence, and you learned a lot from your writing there, right? And then hip-hop was becoming a major force in the music at that time. How did that affect you?
Yeah, it was interesting because the 80s, so I came to Billboard at the end of the 80s, and see, I consider myself a disco baby, so, everybody remembers the the music of their high school years, right? So, like, when I was in high school, it was, like, funk and disco. But I'm also from the South Bronx. So I saw firsthand the beginning of the hip-hop era that started in a lot of dance clubs. So by the time I got to Billboard in 89, in the early 90s, hip-hop was, like, a major force. Like, all these record labels were being launched. You know, Def Jam and Jive and, you know, the major labels had hip-hop divisions. Rap Records was huge. Every R&B record had to have a rapper on it. And so that did change a lot of the music, and it changed a lot of the culture, too, because hip-hop culture with breakdancing and the style of dress, you know, and even the language, how people talked about music and how they talked to each other really had a huge impact on the music industry. But it was interesting because personally, I always felt, and I could be wrong, but this is my personal feeling, that hip-hop was more of a male domain. I mean, don't get me wrong, there were women within the hip-hop industry. We had, you know, female rappers like Queen Latifah and MC Light and, you know, Salt-N-Pepa came along. But it still always felt to me like, you know, it was male dominated, like the music industry itself was male dominated. So for me as a woman, that was interesting. And it was a little bit of a change from being at Essence, which was a women's service magazine. So we wrote a lot about women's issues and things targeted to women. So it was a little different. It kind of changed the scenery for sure.
Okay. Because you work with two major record labels, correct?
Yeah, after I left Billboard, I got a chance to work at Arista Records, which people who follow music know Arista was a major force in the music industry because it was headed by Clive Davis, who's one of those legendary moguls in music. And at the time I was there, I wasn't at Arista very long. In fact, I was there less than a year. But within that year, I worked, I was in the marketing department. I worked on Toni Braxton's debut album. The Bodyguard soundtrack for Whitney Houston had just come out, and we were working that. I worked on a project for Aretha Franklin. And also at that time, I was also working on campaigns for, the label had just made separate label deals with LaFace Records, which is where Toni Braxton was, and that was L.A. and Babyface's label. And Arista had just made a deal with Sean Puffy Combs for his Bad Boy label, so we were distributing that, so we worked a lot of those artists. And then we had another producer out of Atlanta, Dallas Austin, who had also launched a label, and we were working his product. So I was really, really busy during that time. And then at the end of the year, I thought somebody gave me an opportunity to move to Los Angeles, and I grabbed it because I was in New York at the time. So I said, let me get out of New York and try something different. So I worked for Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. They were another well-known producing pair. They worked for Janet Jackson and a whole lot of other, you know, New Edition. And, you know, they were extremely well-known. And they had a small label for a while called Perspective Records. So I moved to L.A. to do publicity. And that was fun because, again, I was able to use my writing talent to write most of their press materials. And also, I was pitching a lot of other magazines and media outlets on covering them. So I worked with Mint Condition. I love those guys. Mint Condition is great. you know, Pretty Brown Eyes. Oh, my gosh. I love that record. And
Barry
White. Yep, Barry White's last A&M project we worked on. The song was Practice What You Preach, which was written by Gerald Levert. And so Gerald would come by the office sometimes. We also had signed a girl group that he found. Gerald Levert sound, and they were called Drama. I remember those girls well, but they never really caught on. But it was a chance to, like, work with Gerald Levert a little bit, so that was cool. And, of course, Sounds of Blackness, which was the big choir chorus out of Minneapolis that worked a lot with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, and they signed them, and they had, you know, they won Grammys for a lot of their songs. So that was a great opportunity. But then after a year there, I ended up working for Billboard again because went back home on the West Coast to Billboard because they had launched a second magazine, a radio magazine. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you. You said you came to L.A. How did you like Los Angeles versus where you were back east?
Actually, I loved Los Angeles. I had, because working at Billboard, I got a chance to travel a lot. Even when I was based in New York, I got to travel. And because the record business is basically three places, New York, LA, and Nashville, where country music is. So I went back and forth to Los Angeles quite a few times and, you know, developed some relationships there. And so by the time I moved, I'd already visited a bunch of times, and I was ready for that no-snow lifestyle, let me tell you. So, except that my first week there was the 1994 Northridge earthquake, so that was kind of scary.
Oh, wow. You were here, girl. You got the experience. Oh, wow.
The first week I was there. But it was a good time to find an apartment because you could see what neighborhoods have fallen down and crumbled and which buildings were still standing up. So it was a good time to find an apartment.
wrong time. But you said a lot, and you have had an opportunity to interview and work with a number of recording artists. Do you have some artists that really stand out to you and any celebrity stories you care to share?
It's interesting because being a journalist, and this is kind of like a professional thing that a choice that I made, because as a journalist, I always thought, well, I need to be impartial. You know, I need to be, if you're going to write about people and critique their music, you can be friendly with people, but you shouldn't be best friends with people. So that kind of stayed with me. I know other journalists who formed a lot of close friendships with artists and stuff over the years, but I always thought, let me just be a little bit standoffish, and I don't know if that was helpful or hurtful, but I love art and I love music, and there were so many personalities that I met that I really, like, I love Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, the producers. Jimmy was always fascinating to interview because he knew a lot about music. He was a funny storyteller, and Terry was funny as well. And so I really liked the time that I worked for them and interviewed them because it was great. I think my first interview for Billboard, and I might be misremembering this, was Teddy Pendergrass. So excited to talk to him. I was like a fangirl, right? I was like nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point when I interviewed him, you know, he'd already had the accident that turned him into a paraplegic. So I wasn't really thinking about that. I was just thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to ask him all these questions, right? Like, I'm burning to know how you became a drummer and then you became the lead singer and all those years and making these records and working in Philadelphia International. I didn't think about, like, in the middle of our interview, I saw he's tired. You know what I mean? He's in a wheelchair. He's probably been doing these interviews all day. And so, you know, I thought, wow, Janine, you can't always, you know, you have to get what you have to get, but you have to be thoughtful about the person sitting across from you as well.
Right.
So that was a lesson to me. You know, I've sat with Bobby Brown and just laughed and cracked jokes, you know, with him because he's hilarious.
that he is hilarious. What about Whitney Houston?
You know, it's funny, for the short time that I worked at Arista, and I did have to travel to some of her events and some of her concerts, I didn't get a chance to develop a relationship with Whitney. I think she was somebody who, you know, she was certainly super talented and, oh my gosh, drop-dead gorgeous. But in the capacity that I worked for her, I dealt mostly with Robin Crawford, who was her manager, friend, companion at that time, and Bobby was there as well. So I ended up talking more to Robin and Bobby than I ever talked to Whitney. And but I was super sad. You know, we were all shocked when she passed. And I never got a chance to meet Michael Jackson, but I met.
You know what? I feel like you too. I said, out of all the artists that I've worked with, I never had an opportunity to work or meet Michael Jackson personally.
I was upset about that. So.
Yeah. Well, I have another question I'm going to ask you, and you don't have to answer it, but the music industry has a reputation for sex, drugs, partying, and excess. Did you experience any of that?
Yes. Well,
no names. They label the industry.
Yes, because let me just say this. I was raised right. I was raised in a Christian home, and I'm not going to say I was always 100% an angel, but I knew that my career could be at stake for a number of different reasons if I went across the line. Like, I was never one who was into drugs. You know, I like my cocktails, and there were a lot of cocktail parties. There were a lot in the music industry, particularly at music conventions. During the 80s and 90s, there were a lot of music conventions, and these were gatherings where, you know, the record executives, the radio people, the radio personalities, the promotion people, the artists, you know, the reporters, everybody was all together in one or two hotels all day and all night. And sometimes people did like to party and get a little out of hand, and you know, sometimes I just knew, don't stay out too late. I was always used to going places alone, and that's not always good when you're a woman. You know, and there is a lot of sexism and harassment, but I remember when there was one convention that I went to in Atlanta, and there was this Miami artist, Luther Campbell, had a group called Two Live Crew, and they were known for their X-rated rapping. And they had a party, like a late night party, and a girlfriend and I wandered in, and we thought, oh, what's this? And there were strippers. You know, there were strippers, and some of them were getting buck naked on stage, and money was flying around, and guys were groping these women. I was just in shock. And my girlfriend said, Janine, this is not for us. We need to leave now. And I was just in shock. Like, my mouth was open. I was like, She's like, no, we're going to leave now. So, well, yeah, it was there. You know, I heard more about the excesses than I actually saw them. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow, there's so much to talk about with you. It would take, like, more than one show, but also, I just like to, is there anyone that's listening that have a question at this time you'd like to ask Janine, please do so. If not, I have plenty of questions. If you do,
please
you could ask. Right. Call in at our number. The number is 323-642-1757. That's 323-642-1757. You're listening to Women in Motion, and that's featured on the E-Water Radio, KEWR-DB. So call in now. Okay, well, Janine, we'll keep moving forward. Maybe we have a few little shy people, but I wanted to ask you too, was there ever a time that you regretted something that you wrote?
interesting because earlier, Peggy, you mentioned having confidence in what you do and having accomplished and attained so much. And I think for me personally, even as I am a professional writer and I have a fairly high confidence in what I do, but at the same time, even now, every time something goes to publication, there's a little part of me that's like biting my nails because I think, did I say everything that I was supposed to say? Did I miss something? Did I get something wrong? Did I get a fact wrong? I mean, that happens. We're human, you know, and especially when you're in deadline and you're going really fast. And I think that's a problem with some of the news and the writing going on today, because the news cycle is so fast. There's news coming out every moment that sometimes things aren't exactly accurate. And sometimes things are reported before they need to be reported, before they're even really a story. There's been a couple of times when I wrote things and I thought, I wish I had had more time to work on it, or that I had more time to think about what I was writing. I mean, I remember one time I was at Billboard in New York, and I had gone to a major record convention. And at these conventions, the labels would oftentimes sponsor big events, you know, for the attendees. And sometimes there was food, and sometimes there were performers and things like that. And I remember there was some sort of carnival type event where they were giving people door prizes and you're playing games and they had food, and it was sponsored by a major label and it was fun. But then when I reported about it, I said, well, it was a great event, but I don't really understand what it has to do with the music or the theme. And I don't even remember what the theme was. And I was just like, there was no connection. And I printed it and it went out. And oh my gosh, the woman executive at this label was irate. She was so angry at me for writing this.
Really?
I don't think our relationship has been right since. She was like, how dare you? And I was like, well, that's, you know, it's just my opinion. But if I had thought it through and how it would have affected her, it wasn't that important for me to have that opinion. You know, it wasn't that important that I should have written it that way. So,
right. Well, most writers, you write what you feel, right? You write what you feel, and you're a professional writer. You write critique, and you do a lot with music too, getting the music of what you're hearing,
exactly,
and what you're listening to, helping artists, and you're helping the publicists and the booking managers. You're helping them get that together so that marketing material could be presented professionally and proper. It could get the attention of where it needs to get to. So.
Exactly.
That's what you do.
And that's not always easy, you know. When you're critiquing a piece of music, you're writing a review, which is a different kind of writing. So now you have to explain what the music sounds like in words. And that's hard. And a lot of times you have to compare it to other artists. You have to put it in a genre of music so you can explain to readers, are they going to like it? That's what they want to know. They want to know, am I going to like this music? Should I buy it? Should I download it? Do I care? So you're trying to explain what it sounds like. And if you have a negative review, that could negatively impact, you know, their plans and their sales and their ability to get the music on the radio. So if you give something a negative review, like I try not to be super negative. I just try to put things in terms of, if you like this type of music, this is going to be up your alley. But if you don't, then you should stay away. Or, you know what I mean? Like put it, I always try to find something positive to say, even in if it's negative. Because you know what? I identify a lot with other writers and artists. Like you're creating something. You're putting it out there. You're putting your heart and soul. So if I don't like your art, that's my opinion, but I don't want to discourage people from making art. You know what I mean? Because it's important.
I don't think right. Well, that's what you are. You're a specialist. You're excellent at what you do. You critique it. You make it perfect. Definitely, I'm going to hire you to work with me and do my work because I want it right. You want it right. You want it to get the attention of whoever it's getting to right away. You know, especially when it's getting into the hands of people. Like, if you work with billboards, it's major big. It takes a lot to even for an artist to get on the billboards, but that's major big. But you said a lot. I like to ask you, did you have any mentors along the way? Anyone in particular?
I did have some mentors, and it's funny because, I was raised by old-fashioned parents who were kind of like, you know, don't draw attention to yourself, don't ask for too much, you know, you don't want to annoy people. So I was always kind of shy about asking people for help, which can be a problem, you know, because a lot of us, we don't do anything alone. You know, we all need somebody to kind of pull our coat and tell us which way to go and coach us. So I was fortunate that when I got to Billboard as the R&B music editor, I was the first, I think I was the first full-time female in that role in a few years. I know there had been another black woman who had been a writer at the magazine years before. For me, and her name was Jean. I think her name was Jean Williams, but I think I only got to meet her once, but we never really talked about what she wrote. But it had been many years since she'd been at Billboard. So when I became editor, a lot of the women in the industry really took me under their wing. They're like, yay, we have another woman in our ranks. Let's welcome her. Let's help her. So there was another woman at Billboard who worked on the charts. So, you know, the Billboard charts is where, you know, records and they try to move up their ranking. And that's how the record labels and radio really judge their success. So she managed the charts. So her name was Terry Rossi. So she really did everything she could within her power to champion me to people within the industry. Also, Nelson George himself kind of laid out the template for the type of journalist I wanted to be at Billboard, do a lot of like analytical writing. And so he gave me a lot of assignments even before I was editor to kind of help me get my writing chops up. And then I have a friend in Philadelphia who's on the radio, Deanna Williams, who is a she's been a broadcast personality for many, many years. She's on the radio, Soulful Sundays there. And she's also an artist coach, a professional media coach. So she coaches a lot of celebrities and recording artists and how to deal with the media, how to be out in the public. She's just a fantastic person. She's knowledgeable. She's funny. And she really took me under her wing and gave me a lot of opportunities. She gave me my first opportunity to write a script for a major award show. Mm-hmm. She took me to a lot of conventions. She introduced me to a lot of people. And her partner at the time was Sheila Eldridge, her business partner. And Sheila Eldridge also gave me a lot of opportunities as well.
That's awesome. It's just so much. I'm cramming everything in, but I like to ask because I'm not going to let this slide. And you did say something about they took you under their wings, but I remember when we talked, you said, I love your positive spirit. I said, I love yours too. Now, who would not love Janine? Who would not? I just wanted to say that. You're awesome, okay? You're well. But let this show go, and I do have several other questions I'm going to ask you. I'm going to just try to get everything in. But you did have an opportunity to edit the official obituary for Aretha Franklin that appeared in the program. Talk a little bit about that, and the family was so gracious to include you in the credits in the program.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was a really wonderful thing for me because a lot of people saw it. And, of course, you know, it's Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. Okay, so let me just give, like, a little bit of background. Currently, I freelance, write for a lot of different people, and I edit a lot of people as well. So that's primarily what I do. I work on my own projects right now. I've written a lot of bios for people. I write a lot of press releases for various parts of the entertainment industry. And so one of the publicists for Aretha Franklin, who worked with her pretty much for 20 years, Gwendolyn Quinn. Over the last couple of years, I've been working with Gwen on various different projects, writing projects, and different things that she needs, because she's a media professional who's been in the industry for many, many years. And so when she was looking for someone to help edit the official obituary, which I didn't write, the family wrote it. Mm-hmm. The family wrote what they wanted to include, the highlights that they wanted. She immediately turned to me and said, "Can you make sure that this is right?" And so I was just really honored by that, because, you know, you can't get any higher than the Queen of Soul. And also, you know, it's an emotional moment for everybody who's involved, you know. And I knew that it was going to be seen by a lot of people. And so I just tried to make the grammar right. I made the sentences flow. You make the transitions. And, of course, you can't include everything that Aretha has done. It would be a book. I was grateful. You know, Gwen said to me, I'll try to get you a credit in there. And I said, I would be so grateful. It was just a very, very small thing that I did, but it was amazing to be part of it. It really was.
To know you and the things that you do, and you're so humble. You're just a blessed young lady. And briefly, how would you advise young people, not only young people, let's just say everyone, because it's not about how old you are. It's about what you do and what you still can accomplish. If you believe it, you can do it. Age has nothing to do with it. But mostly young people, how would you advise a young person who wants to become professional writers, and particularly music journalists today, what would you say to them?
This is an interesting time because of technology. You know, anybody who has an opinion, has access, persistence, you can blog, you can do podcasts, you can do videocasts. But the question for me, and I think for a lot of people of my generation, is that the new generation of writers aren't quite educated and primed in the same way with writing the way we were. You know, we went to journalism classes. A lot of the writers today, you know, they have no professional training in writing. They just go ahead and write. But that's okay. I think the thing that I would advise young people today, I said at the beginning of the show, is to read as much as you can, because good readers make good writers. You become a better writer, a stronger, a sharper writer when you observe sharp writing that's already out there. That's your template, you know. Read a lot of magazines, read newspapers, read books about writing. If you want to go ahead and major in English or journalism, communications, go ahead and do it and just write. Pitch your writing to as many outlets as you can, and just be persistent. Because I think even writers who have done it for a long time, I think now is kind of a pivotal time for us, because writing is devalued. People aren't paying as much for writing now as they did 10 years ago or 20 years ago. You have a lot of instances where there's companies who want content, and so they want content for their websites, for their magazines, for whatever, for their products, and they're hiring people to write thousands of words for $5. That's just wrong. That's devaluing what we do. And because some people will work for that amount, some more professional writers, some of the veterans, we're not getting the work. We're not getting the work that we need to sustain us as professional writers. So that's an ongoing problem for writers.
You're not only, she's not on all of our listeners, writing. She's speaking of writing your books, writing your music, telling your story. Covers everything. Just want to put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
They all know it covers everything.
Well, I think I was talking primarily about news writing. On the flip side, the industry has kind of exploded technology with the self-publishing. The self-publisher, anybody can publish a book now as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there is more of a call for independent editors to help these authors get their books into print and to look professional. And that's part of what I do too. I'm an independent editor, so I work with writers. If you have an idea for a book, but you don't know how to flesh it out, I can help you kind of formalize and focus on what the idea of the book should be and how long it should be. If you've already written something, I can help you edit it and make sure it flows and is grammatically correct and everything is spelled right and that Sarah's name doesn't suddenly to Martha on page 94 because you forgot who your character is. And so it's continuity. So I do that too. So I, you know, anyway I can, because freelancing is another skill altogether. Like, there's a lot of writers out here trying to survive. Mm-hmm.
Right. I was going to say that. And the writing for your book and assisting with the music, getting that out there. And real briefly, because we're going to have to end our show, tell me about what do you do now as an independent contractor and how could people reach out to you or you're available? Someone needs to hire you to work with their project.
Got it. okay. So, well, I'll tell you, I do a lot of independent writing and editing. So if you have something that you need cleaned up for print, or if you're a media person, you need press releases written, I do that. If you need a professional bio, I've written bios for chefs, for artists, for executives, all of that kind of thing. You can, I think, because my website isn't built up right where it needs to be, I'm also known as Syllable Media. And you can find me on LinkedIn under my name, Janine Coveney. I think that's the best way to reach me, through LinkedIn. And you can just send me a personal message, a direct message, and I'll get back to you on LinkedIn. Janine Coveney, J-A-N-I-N-E. Last name Coveney, C-O-V-E-N-E-Y.
Awesome. There it is. Janine M. Coveney is a writing, editing, and content creation professional with more than 2 decades of experience at a variety of media platforms, and that has included a lot, radio, television, syndicated. I mean, you name it, and you have done it all, and you've worked with so many people. So I look forward to working with you. And anything you would like to say before closing to our listeners?
I wish everybody a great journey, professional journey. I really appreciate this show, Women in Motion, because women are doing great things right now. Even Peggy, you hosting this show and providing a forum for everybody is amazing. I love your spirit in trying to share all this information. And keep striving, everybody. Keep striving. Do your passion and make sure that you give back to others coming up behind you. It's important. And that's it.
Wow.
So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And I'm definitely going to have you write my story. You have a wonderful, awesome, blessed Sunday and week over there in Virginia Beach. And when you mentioned how the weather and everything was, I said, wow, I wish I could just take a plane and fly on over.
It's beautiful here. Maybe one day you'll come visit.
I will. For sure I will. You let me know when you're back this way. But I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us on womeninmotion.biz to share all the wonderful, awesome, phenomenal things that you have done and that you are still doing and you're still moving forward full force. So you take care. I look forward to speaking with you soon. And this is Women in Motion. I'd like to let our listeners know we will feature a special guest on the last Sunday of every month. If you know of a woman we need to talk to about her business, email her information to us. Our mission is to recognize and celebrate the accomplishments of women in our local communities and around the world, not excluding men. And I'd like to say thank you to Ed Waterford for making this possible. He's awesome. He's phenomenal. He gets the job done. And if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have this platform. I'd like to thank Nicole also. Nicole has a show. And remember, the month of October is coming up, and that is Breast Cancer Awareness. And there is a convention coming up in the month of November. It's a women's convention that will be posted on our website. And also keep in mind there's DaughtersOfDivineDestiny.org with Dr. Micheline McFarland. So we have a lot of things, a lot of events and women and information we just like to share with you. So keep up with us. Log on to our website. Email me. Listen to our radio broadcast. And you can always still catch it. Even if you missed it today, you want to share with a friend, you can still go to www.blogtalkradio.com/ewaterradio. We thank you for joining us. We look forward to the last Sunday of the month in October. I believe that's October the 27th. Take care. Have a wonderful, awesome day. And once again, Janine Coveney, you have a great, awesome, blessed week. Thank you. We're out.
You too. Thank you so much, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This girl is on fire.